nacl.org. And from listener donations at wjffradio.org.
Hello, hello, hello. And welcome to the Local Edition. News and information to keep you connected in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host for this Friday evening, Patricio Robayo. It's Friday. We made it. Thank you for spending your Friday evening with me. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're safe. I hope you're staying warm. It's getting chilly out there. In the second half of the show, we'll be talking to Andrew Tromboli from the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra about their celebration of Women History Month. They have two performances coming up this weekend. But first, it's Friday on the Local Edition. And every other Friday, we check in with the Times Union Hudson Valley branch, with the managing editor, Philip Pontuso, to see what's happening in our listening area. Philip, welcome back to the program. The Times Union has a story that was just released this morning that discusses the efforts of home care workers to secure fair compensation. I just want to make sure that what we're talking about is home care workers that provide assistance to the elderly, disabled individuals and patients in their own home, which I'm sure includes tasks like cleaning, cooking, and accompanying them to medical appointments. Is my understanding correct there?
Yeah, that's correct. So home care workers, it's kind of a broad category that includes home health aides and personal care aides and certified nursing assistants. But broadly speaking, it's healthcare providers who are working in people's homes. And usually the way that works is they are funded through a Medicaid program run by the State Department of Health, and they'll have maybe a couple of patients and they'll just kind of make the rounds. And of course, every patient will have different needs. And so how often they're attended to by their home care worker sort of depends on the patient and what their specific needs are.
Is there an increased amount that they're looking for as far as pay goes, or is like percentage or a dollar amount?
Yeah, so they're really looking for a kind of clear pathway to make sure that this work will be paid adequately, in their opinion, going forward. So this is really like a years-long fight. There are a number of advocacy organizations. The one that's kind of most active in the Hudson Valley is called the New York Caring Majority. And for years, they had been kind of advocating for what they call fair pay for home care. And there's a bill in the state legislature named that. But last year, they got it passed in budget negotiations. And what was agreed to was a three-year hourly increase above the minimum wage that was going to be rolled out over 2 years. And then crucially, that was indexed to the minimum wage so that the pay for home care workers would stay at a level above a minimum wage job as the minimum wage increased. So the thing that is different this year is that in Governor Hochul's executive budget proposal that she released in February, she's maintaining that $3 increase, $2 of which went into effect last year, and the final dollar will go into effect this year. But she's separating or decoupling, linking any future wage increases to the minimum wage. And in fact, what she's saying is that after this $3 increase goes into place, home care workers' wages will freeze in place until the statewide minimum wage catches up. And only when the statewide minimum wage surpasses what home care workers are getting paid will they be eligible for future wages. So the advocates who have been working on this issue for years, I think kind of rightly see this as a bit of a, you know, betrayal from the governor's office and kind of going back on the agreement that they had last year. I'll talk about this in the Reporters Roundtable tomorrow, but In the One House budgets from the State Senate and Assembly, which were released last week, one of a number of differences from the governor's budget proposal was that they would re-index the home care worker wage to the minimum wage across the state. It's so that as the statewide minimum wage keeps going up, home care workers' wages will stay above the minimum wage. You know, advocates and care workers and people with disabilities say that this is really important because it's a really demanding job and it's an increasingly needed job as New York State's population gets older, as its elderly population grows, and as people increasingly want to be cared for in the comfort of their own home rather than be put into a residential facility or a nursing home, particularly after what we've seen during COVID.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there's also a shortage of workers. I'm sure they need of workers. I know I have some experience with the home health care workers. My mother was in need of one at one point in her life. And I remember it having a lot of high turnover. There was a new person almost every other month. And so it seems like they either get transferred or just leave the system.
That's a real issue too. And it's kind of hard to quantify. Our reporter on this story, Maria Montero Silva, she tried getting information from the governor's office, from the Department of Health, from the Office for the Aging, and from the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities about how many people are on the wait list for home care. And none of them actually had the answer. They could give us like sort of parts of the answer. But yeah, I mean, one advocacy group estimated that 74% of people who need home care in 2021 in the state of New York were not able to retain the number of workers or the adequate number of workers that they needed. So yeah, it's a real issue, and it seems poised to only become more of one if measures aren't taken to make the job a bit more attractive.
Absolutely. And please let us know of any updates on this very important issue.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. We will continue to follow it. And, we'll have a little bit of clarity about the fair pay piece of this based on what comes out of the budget, which will, be released on April 1st, unless they bring it back.
Right. Everything's hinged on that budget. So,
yeah,
we're in that transition from winter to spring when everything starts melting and everything gets wet. And comes the mud. Folks still want to go out there and get healthy, enjoy the outdoors, and go hiking. And the DEC has some tips on how to stay safe. Philip, what can you tell us about what the Hudson Valley Times Union has found out about this?
Mud season, everyone's favorite season, right? Mud season, just for folks who don't know, which is probably very few out in the Catskills, in recent years, people without a lot of outdoor experience, perhaps, or who are new to the region, or who are just visiting on the weekend, might not take adequate precautions such as wearing the right footwear, putting on crampons, etc. There's also it also kind of poses some environmental issues, because if you aren't wearing hiking boots, your inclination might be to walk around the muddy part of the trail, but in doing so you can kind of trample on the plants and the growth that's starting to come up in the spring, and that can kind of have some negative ecological effects, the DEC told us. So they gave us a kind of list of tips and advice that are all pretty common sense. Make sure you're checking weather and trail conditions before you go, hiking. Make sure you're wearing waterproof footwear, like hiking boots or snowshoes if there's still snow higher in the elevations, and then pack like socks, rain gear, extra layers. And then, of course, most importantly, stay on the trail and use trail markers, because it's, as I mentioned, deviating from the trail, you are potentially doing damage to the environment at a very sensitive time of the year for the environment. So that's basically what they say. And then the last one is, try not to use your phone either for navigation or, be careful about when you're taking photos. And the DEC ranger who told us this is the one whose area oversees Catskill Falls. And I think he's just seen one too many people fall and get injured because they're wearing flip-flops, hiking up to Catskill Falls, and then pulling out their phone to take a photo and not paying attention. So be careful about when you're using your phone.
Yeah, definitely. I'm hearing more and more stories about folks getting themselves hurt during hiking trips, getting that photo for Instagram or Facebook, you know?
Yep, it happens more and more often. If you just look at like the annual reports of like incidents that the DC forest rangers have to respond to, there's a really big spike around 2008, 2009 that, you know, has essentially maintained ever since then. And it's right around the time that everybody started getting like smartphones with cameras on their phone. So
trying to get that beautiful shot for Instagram. Were there any tips for bears? You know, I just assume it's spring. Bears usually come out of hibernation spring, or they do, at least in the cartoons.
Yeah, we did address that in the story. So one of the DC folks we talked to said, you know, wild black bears, you know, are hungry coming out of the dormant periods. They usually avoid humans, and really any kind of encounters, rare though they are, happen more in the summer when people camp and are leaving food and trash outside. Like it's very rare that you're going to be running across a black bear just while you're hiking, and that would lead to any kind of actual encounter.
Yeah, well, it has to be scary if you do encounter a bear. Any mention of ticks and tick safety?
No, so this story doesn't get into ticks, but we did have a story that published about 2 weeks ago about the mild winter that we're having. And one of the, where we talked to some environmental experts and ecologists about what the effects might be of the warmer than average weather. I'll note that this published before the big snowstorm, but you know, we're still well above average in terms of temperatures anyway. But one of the things they mentioned is that the ticks have been active like a lot earlier in the season because it was just warmer. So, you know, they don't say that there's going to be more ticks necessarily, but that you should start being aware and checking like now if you go out hiking.
Yeah, having Lyme disease or getting bit by tick in any place of your body, it's not fun. So, Philip Pontuso, thank you so much for joining us on the Local Edition and letting us know what's happening in the Hudson Valley. We're talking to the managing editor for the Hudson Valley Times Union. Philip, we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Actually, you could catch Philip tomorrow on the Reporters Roundtable. That's right. Philip will be joined with me, Lee Mayo, Joseph Abraham, and Chris Rowley. That's happening tomorrow on Radio Chatskill at 10 a.m. I'll be the host for Radio Chatskill. Also, we'll be talking to John J. Lennon, a prison journalist, about the housing crisis that inmates face once they leave prison. Coming up for you is the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra. It's like the room just cleared of smoke. I didn't even stay tuned.
You are listening to The Local Edition, winner of 2 Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
There's always a story behind the music, how the song was written, why the song was written. I'm Kathy Geary. Join me for Now and Then. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Listen to talk radio and you're likely to hear repeated broadcasts of disinformation, election lies, and conspiracy theories. Is that legal?
The FCC's news distortion policy prohibits deliberate staging, slanting, and falsifying of news. broadcasters can't knowingly report false information.
So, case closed? For the answer, listen to this week's On the Media from WNYC.
You're listening to The Local Edition. Let's take a quick look at the weather before we get on with our program. Because I just went outside and it's chilly. Tonight, partly cloudy this evening. Lows around 30. Tomorrow, freezing rain and a chance of snow in the morning. That's right, snow. And on Saturday night, chance of showers. Low of 35. Sunday, mostly sunny. High of 51 degrees. And on Sunday, mostly clear, low of 29 degrees. You're listening to The Local Edition on a Friday. I'm your host, Patricio Rabayo. We have an interview with the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra about the performances that are happening this weekend. Stay tuned.
Keep saying you want to make new friends, so start today. Hang out with John Turturro and Jane Curtin as Selected Shorts digs into stories about lasting friendships. I'm Meg Wolitzer, your host, and after this show, maybe your new friend.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to The Local Edition. News and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. The Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra is scheduled to perform as part of the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance Salon Series and the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center this coming Saturday and Sunday. The event is to honor Women's History Month and will showcase compositions for four renowned female composers. This is some of the music. This is the first movement of Hans Gehl's Intermezzi for String Quartet, performed by some of the performers that will be performing this weekend. Andrew Tromboli, the artistic director and bassist for the Sullivan County Chamber Orchestra, is joining us on the phone now to provide some more details about the upcoming performances. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the program. The program is entitled Everlasting Impressions, and you're honoring four female composers. If you could talk about who are the four female composers that will be featured, and why are they featured?
Well, you know, all of our programs, we try to start with usually one piece, one style, one something that inspires us. And in this case, it was the Clara Schumann Piano Trio. That's going to be the piece that ends our program. And it's such a great representation of German romantic music. And it was such a profound piece of music that it inspired her husband, Robert Schumann, to write another piano trio after that. Clara Schumann was known all over Europe as a brilliant performer, not so much as a composer, because, you know, in a lot of similar ways to Fanny Mendelssohn, oftentimes while her music would have gained the respect of her colleagues around her within private circles, if she wanted to have any shot of this music being performed publicly, Clara Schumann, Fanny Mendelssohn would often have to publish it under, in the case of Clara, her husband's name. So that was the big piece that we wanted to go with. And then from there, how do we blend? How do we fuse other pieces with similar styles or opposing styles to create a really complete menu of music? And the next option after that was Amy Beach. Amy Beach is remarkable in her own right because not only is she a pioneer of American female composers, she was also one of the only ones to be trained exclusively in America, which is rare. You know, at the time when composers like Amy Beach were becoming more prominent, they would often go to Europe to study under the, I guess, quote unquote, true masters of European classical music. So to have a female who is not only American born, who's not only a misogynized and underrepresented composer, she's also American born and trained. Like Clara Schumann, she also had a lot of respect as a performer until she was married. And then her husband being a doctor, kind of forced her to quiet down her performing life a fair bit, which is a sad truth. And that happened to a lot of composers. So her music, I find a lot of similarities to Russia, to German romantic music. Often there's a lot of similarities to Beethoven. But this particular Amy Beach has a much more colorful palette that might leave you with the idea of it could almost be French impressionistic. So we wanted to find a piece of music that paired well with that. And Lily Boulanger is a remarkable composer who, unfortunately, she died very, very young from illnesses. So we have no idea the kind of career that she could have had in the grand scheme of things. But her small impact was so, her small life was such a monumental impact among composers and among the, and within her family as well, because her sister, Nadia Boulanger, went on to train some of the great composers of the world. And at most conservatories that you go to when you're studying ear training, theory, composition, there's always going to be some reference to Lily Boulanger. While we don't know what her life could have been, we can certainly make assumptions with the political landscape of that time with what her life may have been. So with those three pieces, we were left with just not enough music to make a full program. So this is actually where I often reach out to my colleagues for assistance. There's a lot of music out there, especially a lot of new music from living composers that I, you know, try to keep myself as aware of as I can, but you're always going to miss some things. So our pianist made a beautiful recommendation for Rina Esmail, who took a second movement of her clarinet concerto, and she arranged it in a piano trio version. And she originally presented this as a wedding gift to a friend, but it's become such a beloved part of her ensemble. And the fact that she tries so hard to make her music accessible online through her website, it made it such an easy and obvious choice to feature a prominent living composer who wrote a beautiful piece of music that just kind of ties a very, very nice bow around this. And she brings a unique element to this, to her music, because Rina Esmail is a champion of matching the East and the West. She herself is Indian American, and she has wrote a lot of music that either features traditional Indian instruments or has borrowed from elements of traditional Indian music. So you'll see a lot of elements that might be kind of reminiscent of strumming in the same style that you would see a sitar play, lots of ornamentations, dancing around the beats to make it a very free and moving experience.
Mm. Now, you know, you're talking about how some of the composers had to present work, publish work under a different name because they were female. In your opinion, what do you think female composers have been historically been underrepresented and would have to do those things in classical music?
You know, within classical music, it was certainly a man's world. And that is no, and it was a man's world, no secret, within the 19th century. And that's where this often had to happen the most. And, you know, that's not to say that women weren't trained in classical music. Women were often trained in music because they were the ones entertaining the guests at the home. They were building the home. Part of building the home didn't just mean, obviously, building the family, taking care of the kids, but it also meant adding to the culture of the home. So for them, training within whether an instrument, usually piano or violin, and some of the more popular instruments of that time, that was something that was often enforced early on, but obviously there's talent everywhere that we have known this. We've seen some remarkable talents from, I should say, in very unusual places. So, you know, it's no surprise that they were such a talent that they became trained, and there were some composers around their circles. For instance, within Clara Schumann, Brahms, Johannes Brahms, there was a very close relationship between the Schumanns and the Brahms. Brahms himself was a incredibly monumental composer at that time who saw the talent, but also recognizing the limitations that women had because they just wouldn't be taken seriously for the concert hall for, I think, unfortunately, just very misogynistic reasons. There's no clever excuse for why this happened the way that it did. So that's why they would try to find their ways of secretly promoting their music to the best that they can. And thankfully, through the work of brilliant historians, musicologists, were able to go back and see the teeny tiny details in the score that might separate a Clara Schumann from a Robert Schumann. And these are things, you know, people have studied for a long time. They're very, very slight, but they're there. And this is also just done through accumulating letters and documents and every little piece of information that allows us to, you know, take a peek into a composer's life, even if it's sometimes just a little funny memo on a score somewhere, can give us so much insight into who these people were. And that informs us how we can try to best recreate their music to the best of our ability.
Absolutely. Now, do you think that in this current age, do you think that female composers are gaining more recognition in classical music world today?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Not only in compositions, but within the performance circles as well. I think the New York Philharmonic has shifted the majority to a majority women orchestra. So yeah, 100%. Do you have so much support being and attention being brought now? But of course, you know, there's still so much work to do because, you know, the art opportunities for the arts are expensive. So it might be difficult for very, very young composers to get the attention to put their music out there. So it's better, but we still have a long way to go.
So you talked about we having these four female composers who are going to be featured. Can we talk about who's actually performing these songs and part of the Sylvan County Chamber Orchestra?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd be happy to do that. So the co-founder, my partner, Akiko Hosoi, she's the co-founder of the orchestra as well as the leading violinist of the orchestra. She'll be there performing. We have Kirsten Germain on cello. She'll be returning. She has been a recent discovery of ours. We met her probably about 2 years ago now. And she has such a powerful presence within chamber music, which is such an incredible experience that to have her presence with Akiko makes such a dynamic duo. And they were joined last minute by Roting Lee. Unfortunately, our original pianist, Matthew Graybill, had to withdraw due to an injury that flare up that didn't go away. So Matt stepped in, found Roting, who is a beautiful person and a beautiful player with so much grace and nuance and power and weight behind her notes that I haven't heard them yet. I will hear them on Friday for the first time, and I can't wait. I think it's going to be an amazing experience.
That's awesome. And I said, this, you have a full weekend of programming. So on Saturday, you are at the Harleyville Performing Arts Center. Is that correct? And what time does that show
Saturday
start?
Saturday at 6 p.m.
At 6 p.m. And then on Sunday, you're part of the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance Salon Series. And that one, I believe, starts at 2 p.m., right, on Sunday?
That's correct, at the Krauss Recital Hall.
That's awesome. You're hitting really two parts of the county. You're in Hurleyville, and then you're in Narrowsburg the next day. So you really, we talked about off-air how large the county is, and sometimes it's not always accessible for everyone. And it's great that you're bringing your programming, especially these four female composers being featured, to two different parts of the county. So,
oh, thank you. You know, we have a very cultured and a very intelligent audience within our county, and there's no reason why distance should limit them from hearing great music.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're talking to Andrew Tramboli, the artistic director and bassist for the Sullivan County Chamber of Orchestra, talking about the full weekend of programming they have in store. Thank you so much for talking to us, Andrew, and look forward to hearing this great music that's going to happen this weekend.
Thank you, Patricio. Appreciate your time.
And that does it for the Local Edition. We'll be back on Monday. We do this all over again. On Monday, we'll be talking about the survey that's going around for older adults. Also, we'll be checking in with the Sullivan County Democrat newspaper. If you ever miss a show, we have a podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your favorite podcast, Google, Apple, Stitcher. You can find us on social media. We're WJFF Radio, Catskill, Facebook, Instagram, even TikTok. You can visit our website, wjffradio.org/thelocaledition. You've been listening to The Local Edition, and I've been your host, Patricio Rubio. Have a good night, Lucy. Coming up for you is the mixtape. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. I'll talk to you again soon. I'll talk to you again tomorrow. Radio Chatskill, 10 o'clock. Tune in. I'm there hosting. You don't want to miss it. Thanks again. Thanks again. Thanks again.